understanding people's nature and how they can be so good at something that's often within their cognitive strengths and they don't even see it. So when you start to see that in other people, I mean, it really changes your level of respect that they may have a talent that's so far outside yours.
Welcome to Powered by Instinct, a podcast for professionals who think about how your fundamental nature drives performance. In each episode, Colby experts will interview top performers, team leaders, consultants, and coaches to discuss identifying team members' strengths, aligning those strengths with their jobs, and optimizing individual and team performance. If you're interested in getting more done more naturally, then let's jump in.
Hey, it's David Colby. Thanks for being here again at our podcast. It's good to see all of you, and it's great to have with us today Dana Ansbach, who is a longtime Colby certified consultant. She's used us with clients. She's used us in running her very successful financial advisor business, Sensible Money. She's used us in her personal life. So Dana, thanks for being here. I really appreciate your time today. And I really appreciate how much you've done with Colby over the years.
Well, thank you, David. I am very excited to be here because, as you know, Colby is one of my very favorite things to talk about.
So let's get started kind of at the beginning of your Colby journey. How did you hear about us? And what was the first, like, not just hear about us, but what was your first introduction in terms of using it?
I had a friend in 2010, and we were talking about business, and he said, you know, you really need to go take this assessment tool. And I'm somewhat of an assessment tool junkie. I love learning about myself and you know, human beings in general and how we operate. So I jumped online and took it. It was 36 questions. And the results that came back were very liberating for me. So I found out that I am supposed to change things, that my way of doing things is trial and error. And, you know, technically I was classified in what at the time Colby called a natural advantage of an entrepreneur. And at the time I had a business partner who was always very, you know, he would say things like, you know, why do you always want to change everything? Why can't you leave well enough alone? You know, why can't this just be good enough? Why aren't you happy? I remember specifically him saying that. And I was running around thinking, am I unhappy? I don't think I'm unhappy. You know, I feel like a pretty happy person. And then I remember actually thinking, what's wrong with me? And so for me, the results were so liberating in knowing that I wasn't the kind of person to just leave well enough alone. That might be the exact right way for someone else to be. But for me, I was the kind of person always looking for ways to improve things. And it just, you know, understanding that about myself set off a whole catalyst of changes that I really attribute much of my success to.
Yeah, that 8 in quick start that you have. And I think, this is a great introduction because people oftentimes, I mean, it's hard to understand sometimes the difference between your cognitive strengths and your affective strengths. And that was a case of that friend thinking or the business partner thinking, well, gosh, you must be unhappy if you're changing things. Like, no, those are two separate. With your 8 and quick start, it's more like when you have the opportunity to change things, that's more natural for you. So, yeah. So what was the first way you used it? You got the results. Did you find yourself using it professionally first or personally first? Or
the first way I used it, I had my business partner take it. And I started using it in terms of understanding how I was interacting with my coworkers. So the first thing was I wanted them to, of course, understand me. Like, here's the answer to your question. Why am I always wanting to change things? Well, here you go. So I pretty quickly saw it as a way to understand and use each other's strengths. And so one of my key admin assistants, who is still works with us today, she was an initiating fact finder and follow through. I am a 6582, and I believe her numbers are 7823. And so what would happen when we would meet is she would always give me the whole story. Okay, so this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. And I would want to get to the bottom line, like, just, you know, what's the problem? What's going to be the solution? And so after we had each taken Colby and looked at each other's results, we were able to more effectively meet in the middle. So she would start meetings trying to cut to the end result. And I would, whenever I communicated with her, try to give her all the history and the full story. So now we were actually working toward meeting each other's, you know, communication needs and cognitive needs. And it reduced friction. things that we used to be angry and just irritated at, we started to laugh at. And, you know, then I remember when we hired another new person who was also an initiating fact finder, this admin sent them a welcome email that said, "Welcome, fellow historian." And it was just, you know, it became part of our culture. And so that was really the first thing for me, is it changed the way I viewed other people. I used to view, my apologies, David, but I viewed people like you as balloon poppers. And so, you know, you guys
are, fair enough.
Yeah. You guys would come around with your darts and I'd have these great ideas and it was like pop, pop, pop. And, you know, I just feel deflated. And so instead, it really shifted my perspective as to how you work in teams and how people with different strengths than you can point out why an idea you have may not work, save you a lot of time and energy from going down that path or wasting resources. So it fundamentally changed. I used to be, I'd say, a lot more arrogant in thinking that my way of doing things was best. And I would think, you know, why can't, you know, this is easy for me. Why can't you do it? And then I started to see things so differently, that this is easy for me because that's within my strengths and that is easy for them, and which types of tasks were better suited for other people. And that was really it's a long answer, but it really shifted the way I see people.
So people have an understanding of the context. I mean, I mentioned you're a financial advisor, but you have your own spin on it. I'll say, kind of full disclosure, we're also a client of Dana's in addition to Dana being a client of ours, but tell people about your business and the way you operate.
Yeah. So we are a fee-only financial planning firm, and our specialty is helping people transition into retirement. So most of our clients are 55 and older, and at that point in time where they're thinking about, how am I going to live off my acorns? I've accumulated this, you know, collection of investments and real estate stuff, and now I need it to all work together toward creating reliable cash flow. So we have a specialty, and we have grown from myself and 1.5 employees in 2011 to 15 strong today. We were just named on the Inc. 5000 list of fastest growing privately owned companies, which is an awesome honor. And I attribute a lot of that. We use Colby for all of our hiring, so we won't hire without it. We train on it throughout the year, and we use it as people are understanding, you know, when we're putting people into teams. We've even shifted teams around in ways that we thought people would more effectively work together.
Talk to us a little bit about the way you use it with clients, because I know there are other financial advisors who do that, but it's more the exception than the rule. And I know that you use it with clients. So tell us about it.
Yeah. So we spent a few years offering it, and actually when we couldn't make people do it, but we really wanted each new client to take the Colby A, and then we would send them their results. And for couples, we would send them their what's called their A to A result. And many of them found it, of course, as many couples who have been together a long time do, very entertaining. It makes them laugh. They go, "Oh, yeah, you know, I recognize our behaviors in this report. It's amazing that it knew that." So it helped us understand, for example, an initiating fact finder client comes in and they will sometimes send a list of 20 questions. And it can be easy, if you don't understand their nature, to interpret that as distrust. They don't trust me. Why are they questioning everything? They must not believe what I say. But that's not it at all. They just need a lot of information and they have very specific questions. And so it helped us to understand that. We have some people who want to go to the bottom line, our Quick Start clients. They don't want to walk through all of the numbers and how did we get here. They just show me the bottom line. They'll ask a few questions to verify that we got the numbers right, that they feel like, you know, there's some accuracy there. And then, you know, your initiating follow-throughs often do want to see the whole story. You want to go in order, right? You want to see, here's what we gathered, this information you gave us from here, and then it went here, and then this is how we came up with this result. So it just helped us understand how to present and share information. And even more importantly, how to not misinterpret some of the questions and reactions that we would get from clients. There was an understanding around why they were reacting that way.
Have you found that clients are like usually excited or interested, or do they push back, or how does that usually go?
I found where we think it has the most value. So if our practice was more focused on people in their earning years, I think Colby can become a core part of a practice where you're incorporating it into some career coaching and helping people accelerate their earning power. Because we work with often successful people who are at the tail end of their career or already retired, we find it's really affirmation. They've learned a lot of these things about themselves over the years. And so, yes, they're interested, but I think where it has the ability to have a really big impact is on people in their younger. I mean, I wish every person in college was exposed to this and every person earlier in their career.
Yeah, believe me, I would love that too. That's, as you know, that's part of our mission is
yeah,
to empower people's lives by giving them that understanding. And you're right, if they get it earlier, they don't have to learn things the hard way as many times. I mean, you know, as you were describing with your business partner, there's so many people who kind of have to wait until other people have told them, well, you need to act like this. And they kind of feel like they get ground down and then they get this information and it's like a breath of fresh air. Or, you know, as you were describing it, it's very freeing. Like, oh, I don't have to do it that way. There's nothing wrong with me. But
yeah, I have 4 younger siblings. My youngest brother is 15 years younger than me. And he was going to school to be a mechanical engineer and couldn't find a job. And I had him take the Colby. I actually did my whole family and went home for Christmas one year and did a family training on it. We laughed. It was awesome. But we had him incorporate some of the language into his resume. He got a job like that. I mean, had hundreds of resumes out, couldn't get a job, got a job like that. And he ended up, he is a 2 in follow through, I believe a 7 in quick start and maybe a 6 in implementer. And then as initiating fact finder, he's right in the middle. He might be a 6, he might be a 7. I can't quite remember. But he was very adaptable, that 2 in follow through. You know, he could jump from one task to the other. And
yeah.
And so he found himself with this position where his job was to supervise a team of engineers out of India. He was based in Indiana. And so he sent me this text one day. It was short, but I wish I had it. It was something along the lines of, thank you, sis, for teaching me that my adaptable ways don't mean I'm crazy, you know, that I can multitask. And, you know, it was perfect for the job because he constantly had to be going back and forth and being interrupted. And so it was just such a perfect use. And I think, you know, how would he have ever known that?
Well, especially in that field, that's not the typical engineer MO. You know, they're usually much more process oriented, you know, initiating follow through rather than preventive. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been very unlikely that a mentor in that field would have taken him aside and said, oh, this is how you should, you know, be. Unlock that. Like they much more would have said, no, you should do it the way, you know, 9/10 of us do it.
Yeah.
And they would mean well. I mean, that's what worked for them. They wouldn't have known.
So
I love stories like that.
Yeah.
So tell us about running your business and using Colby. So you've talked about hiring, you've talked a little bit about communication. How have you gotten other people? Because I know this is sometimes an issue. Like, sure, you love it and you tell everybody you should do it, but how have you found other people's kind of bringing it into the way they not just work for themselves, but work with each other?
Well, as I said, we train on it every year. And so we have a folder with everybody's Colby A indexes, and we have a folder with their A to A with all of their immediate team members, and they can request one with, you know, anyone on the team if they want to see it. And so once a year we ask everyone to go, and it's part of a training that we have built into our process. We want them to go in to look at it, and we will ask them to share some things they learned from revisiting their Colby. We'll ask them to share some things that they saw, some insights they had in working with others. And we've had so one of our teams, they're very different. One of them is an initiating quick start like me, and the other one is initiating fact finder, counteracting quick start. And so they took this Zoom photo once of their faces, you know, and one of them was like, and the other one's like, and So it was, they were talking about something and they happened to notice their faces at the time and their reactions. And so they literally snapped it as an example. So we found that by building it into our culture, people get it and they will laugh about it. And, you know, when someone comes to me with issues, I'll be listening for, could this be a situation, you know, we call it the Colby rub. I know there's a technical term for it, but we call it the rub, where, you know, you're just experiencing something that they're not doing it the way you would do it. And is that okay? And so we've found it to be very liberating. You know, people respond to it. We have our latest hire, Navaris, and he took it. And then we offered for people to have their spouse take it. So we had a spouse take it. And he immediately wrote me back. And then I met with him and did his interpretation. He said, how do you know this stuff about me? He's like, I've never spoken to you before. And you know these things about me. And so he was just kind of blown away. And so I think the power of that is what gives people the buy-in, that I might know these things about them just from seeing their test results and asking them a few questions and saying, you know, I bet right. you like to organize things and I bet your closet looks like this. And, you know, and they just, whoa, how do you know that? That really gives people that buy-in. My significant other, he is 5'2", 7'6". And so his Colby A says that he defies the odds, defies the elements is the specific language in it. And he was just blown away. He's like, since a child, I defy the elements. I can go out in cold weather. Hot weather doesn't bother me, you know. He's like, how could it possibly know that? He just couldn't. He still can't get his head around the fact that it could come up with something that specific for him.
Yeah, those kinds of things, they still kind of blow me away once in a while. But as I like to say to people, you told us. I mean, you answered the questions. We just know that based on the way you answer the questions, there are these patterns that just hold true. So we didn't ask, you know, do you defy the elements? But by asking other things and getting the pattern of the answers, you kind of know, oh, well, this is how this person operates. Do you think that this has helped you more in your personal productivity or in the way you lead your team?
Oh, that is a really tough question to answer. I would probably say in the way I lead my team. And so if I had to choose one or the other, you know, personal productivity, it certainly helped me understand who I am. But the impact it's had on how I interact with other people is massive, I have to say. I mean, when I said that I think I was probably arrogant before, I mean it. I may not have expressed arrogance on the outside, but I think sometimes what I was feeling on the inside would be along those lines. And so I don't feel that. I mean, I literally, like, it's truly when you fundamentally feel respect for someone else's way of doing things and appreciate mm-hmm. it. And that's not, you know, a technique. I think as leaders, we learn all these strategies and techniques. And, you know, there's a difference between internalizing something and reading it as a technique. And so,
yeah,
you know, understanding people's nature and how they can be so good at something that's often within their cognitive strengths and they don't even see it. You know, we describe it as they're like a fish in water. They don't even see the water. They don't even see how natural it is for them. So when you start to see that in other people, I mean, it really changes your level of respect that they may have a talent that's so far outside yours. And so, I would have to say in my leadership skills.
Well, it's interesting as I was listening to your answer to that, you know, sometimes we get asked, well, when does this not work or who's not a good client target for you? It's kind of the mindset, whether it's arrogance as you're describing it or leaders who just feel like, look, I know not just what the objectives are, but I know how we're going to get there and everybody needs to do it my way. Like, that's not a good client for us. And you're right. People are given strategies and techniques sometimes, but the more they actually, you know, it comes from within them that they actually respect the talents that other people bring. And that doesn't mean they aren't, you know, demanding or have high expectations. That's another thing that sometimes people misunderstand is, no, it's not like when you know somebody's Colby result, you then don't expect them to produce on whatever their objectives are, their, you know, what they're required to do. but you give them the leeway to do it in a way that works for them. And, but yeah, the people who don't have that respect and understanding that, wow, what that person does is really important, and I'm actually going to be able to do my job better, or our organization will succeed because they do things that I just wouldn't do.
Yeah.
And wouldn't be good at if I did it.
Yeah. But I agree. Yeah,
that doesn't always change. Like you're describing, your mindset changed. I've certainly worked with leaders who've brought us into organizations, and it's like, well, I brought you in to fix them. I'm great, but you really need to fix them because they don't get it. And that often doesn't work. But
no, that doesn't work. I mean, leadership starts at the top. And if you're not willing to look inside yourself, and you know, some of that shifts to the affective side of really sure. being able to say, you know, I'm willing to look at myself and see what needs to change to be a more effective leader, and be open to that my way isn't always right. Yeah. And so I can see how leaders can fall into that trap of, you know, I'm great. Look what I've accomplished. But, you know, my favorite saying is, what got me here won't get me there. And so there's, for me, and that some of that I understand is my Colby, that constant, you know,
true.
Looking for how could I do it better? You know, how could this be more effective? I love efficiency. Oh my gosh, I love efficiency. You know, if I see, you know, I'm a 5 in follow through. And if I see, you know, something that's inefficient, it's almost a compulsion to say, okay, we have to fix this. Like there's a faster way to do this. If we can reduce this process from 5 clicks to 2 clicks, that's just, you know, that's life changing for me.
I didn't know we shared this compulsion. This is good to know.
Didn't know that either. Yeah. So, you know, but I do think there can be that tendency to say, well, look what I've accomplished. You know, my way is great. And the more, I believe the more you really shift to that mutual respect and understanding other people's talents. I mean, we would never have grown this firm if we were all like me. Never, never. It would be a disaster. Honestly, I can assure you. I love coming up with new processes and systems, but I'm not the one to follow them forever. I will follow them as an example and to teach people in the firm, but I have right. other people who, you know, the things that we need to get done for clients need to happen on a routine, consistent basis. And I have other people who are great at that and they love it. They absolutely love, okay, this task says to do this. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go yeah. look here. I'm going to check this. I'm going to make sure that was done. And we function so much better because of our diversity.
Yeah, that's a huge benefit of understanding this is, as we were saying before, is that appreciation for what those people are doing. And you're saying the clients need it, but you're not the best one to do it. And you have somebody else who can handle it and they love it. That's the other thing that I still get surprised at sometimes is, wait, you actually look forward to doing stuff like that? Because that is just not me. But when you realize that in somebody else, it again, the light kind of goes off and you're like, wow, now I get it. Now I can see how the two of us work well together and can get more done.
Yeah.
So back to clients, I meant to ask you this before. So you have lots of clients take a Colby index. Does it actually change the financial advice you give them, or does it change the way you communicate, the way you present it to them?
I would say no. And I remember early on when I went through certification, we talked about finances and the impact that our Colby might have on that. And that was really, I remember Kathy talking about the affective. Lots of things that we grew up with affect the way we think about money. And one of the most surprising results was my dad's Colby. He is an initiating quick start also. He was in the Army. We always saw Dad as just this rigid, you know, by the book, but he was in sales. And so when we did our family interpretation, some stories started to come out that I had not heard before, that Dad had never shared with us. And really understanding that his responsibility as a parent overrode perhaps his cognitive instincts. And so as we saw Dad growing up, he was very by the book and rigid. And, you know, we didn't see as much of his quick start nature. And particularly with finances, you know, my dad was a good saver, an excellent saver, and taught all of us kids the need to save and the compound power of compounding interest and all of these things. He was a master's in math, and he loved this stuff. And so I attribute much of my career to hearing that from him growing up. But, you know, so remembering that when we use it with clients, we try to remember that it's really about things like how they're going to ask for the information, how they're going to understand the information. But there's all kinds of other things impacting their ultimate financial decisions. So I don't know that it necessarily impacts the advice that we give.
Right.
Yeah, that's what we found.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I'm it's not really surprising to me. And maybe it's my, you know, kind of the rational math side of me. But yeah, a lot of the math on retirement in particular, and, you know, you do need to understand the affective parts. And I know you do. You're also very thorough in understanding that with your clients too, because it does all fit together. How much do you use other assessments with clients as well? You said you personally are kind of an assessment junkie. Do you use other stuff with clients?
We don't. So we haven't used any other assessment tools with clients. Myself personally, over the years, I feel like I've taken them all. I'm sure there's some I've missed, but I've taken Myers-Briggs and Enneagram and Predictive Index and StrengthsFinders and Colors and the DISC system. And
you're thorough.
Very thorough. And there's some common themes across them. But for me, what really drew me to get certified as a Colby certified consultant was I saw it in people's behavior every single day. And I didn't have that same experience with other assessment tools. And so, you know, it was so, once you really understood how someone operates, it just, for me, it was just so prevalent in their behavior. And I hate to use the word predictive because we're not robots, you know, it's not predictive,
right.
But there are things that you can kind of know how someone's going to go about something. You might not know the final decision they're going to make, but you're going to know like how they're going to go about gathering the information or how they're going to go about
right.
doing the project. And so I honestly never lose that sense of awe, as we were talking about earlier, at how, you know, you can answer 36 questions and it could know some of these things about you. There's still, for me, that sense of awe. And when I see it in people's behavior, that awe comes, it comes anew almost every day.
So did you want to get certified because you just kind of are an assessment junkie and love this stuff? Or was it more being able to apply it in your business and with your clients?
You know, when I initially got certified, I believe it was 2012. So I think I took the Colby A in 2011 and then got certified in 2012. I don't even know if I knew why. I just was drawn to it. So, you know, with all the other assessment tools I've taken, I never had any desire to go get certified. But this was different. And as I mentioned, it was so fundamentally life-changing for me in understanding myself that I think I just, you know, I was just drawn to it. I wanted to learn more. And I certainly wanted to be able to share it with people. I knew that financial services is my first business. When people have asked me, you know, if I weren't doing financial services, what would I be doing? And it would probably be something in human development. And I, you know, probably would be using Colby with a different type of client. But I knew I wanted to share it with people. And I know, you know, many years ago at the Colby conference, I was able to deliver the presentation. I think it was, I don't buy people lunch, I buy people Colbys. And, you know, that's what I would do. I would meet, you know, a new potential hire or a vendor or a friend or my family. And I would be like, look, I, you know, if you're willing to do it, I'd really like to send you this Colby A index and I'll spend the time going over it with you. I don't know what my plan was. It was like a compulsion.
Just had to do it.
That's a quick start for you, though. We don't always know why.
Jumped right in. And you've had your team do the Colby one-day training. In addition to the training that you do with them, what was that decision-making process about?
You know, it's actually what one of the questions you asked earlier around, you know, how do we get it into our culture? How do we make sure that, you know, people are using Colby or understanding it? And so we decided, and we're all, you know, sometimes we hear information from a third party more effectively than we hear it from someone we're familiar with. We've all experienced that with family. You know, we don't listen to our family, but a stranger can tell us the same thing. And, you know, next thing you know, your spouse is like, I've been telling you that. So I think, you know, for us, it was if we can bring outside trainers in and people can learn about Colby, or in this case, we sent four people to the Colby one-day training so they can hear it differently. And it did, you know, somebody says things differently than I might say it. You know, whoever they're hearing from that day, you know, might resonate more with you know, how that employee hears things. And so we found that very valuable. And then every couple of years, as we have new people come up in the firm, we think it makes sense to send them to that training so they can learn more.
So shifting gears a little bit, just for our audience, I'm not always the big like hype man, so I probably should have hyped you up more. But so the audience knows, Dana's an influential thought leader in the financial services, financial advice, financial planning, and retirement in particular area. Can you give us a little bit about your philosophy for your firm? And I know every client is different, so it's not specific investment advice, but just kind of your approach to advice that you give your clients on how to tackle planning for retirement.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to talk about.
I know, and you're really good at it too.
You know, years ago, I was with a CPA firm, and this couple came in, and they reminded me of my grandparents, and they brought in 10 years worth of statements of what their broker had advised them to do. And in that particular 10-year time period, their money hadn't grown at all. Now, if they had just been given advice and education, their money had the potential to have doubled over that 10 years without taking a lot of risk. And I remember just getting mad. This was about 2003, and they were 65. And I was thinking, you know, at 65, they don't have a chance for a do-over. They're retiring. They don't have earned income anymore. Like, this isn't right. There's got to be a better way. And that really started my deep dive. The industry was highly focused on accumulating assets, but there wasn't a lot of focus on what we call decumulation. You know, how do you draw the money out? There's a different set of risks at that time, and it's no longer about maximizing returns. And so we designed our process around this decumulation. I have a designation called a retirement management advisor. All of our planners acquire this designation. I think of it as your certified financial planner designation is like getting a bachelor's degree, and the RMA designation is like getting a master's in retirement decumulation. And so we have a very defined process that helps plan out someone's cash flows and when they would take Social Security and if they have annuities or business income or rental income, and then how much they would need to draw out of their portfolio. And our first line of thinking is, how do we maximize their after-tax cash flow just by being more tax efficient or by changing the order in which we might draw out money? So it has nothing to do with the rate of return. And so first we're looking for all of these, you know, we literally call it squeezing more out of your money, and we trademarked the term juicing. Like, how do we help people squeeze more out of their money? But not by finding the right stock, but by being more tax efficient and coordinating right, all of these pieces. And then we have a specific way of aligning the portfolio. So once we have those cash flows laid out, we want to align the portfolio to those cash flows. And again, we do it very differently than the rest of the industry because we look at it more as if we were managing a pension. You know, we have retirement paychecks to deliver, and pension plans use a process, the technical term is asset liability matching. And so we take that process, but we apply it to individual households to provide more predictable cash flows from the portfolio. And it's a way of managing risk is really what it is. We're more concerned with making sure the money lasts for someone's life, usually about 30 years. So that's our biggest concern. The lesser concern is, oh, you know, how do we earn the highest rate of return possible? Well, if you go for the highest rate of return, you're always taking on more risk, and that more risk could mean that someone could run out of money. And for us, that's not a risk we're willing to take.
Right. Well, thank you for that. For those of you who are interested in more, definitely go to Sensible Money and check out her stuff. And as I said, Dana's a thought leader. So if you just Google her writing, she's got stuff all over the internet that talks about that approach. And another part that speaks to me, I think, is your approach to people and helping them understand it's not about being a miser and just accumulating a bunch of stuff and having it sit there. It's about, what do you want to do with it? What, I mean, you're going to be alive. You're going to be using this money rather than just having it sit there. And, you know, with an understanding that yes, it needs to be there so you don't run out. So it's not being foolish and spending it all day one, and then what do you do? But so many times people get focused on, well, I've got to just keep it and accumulate it. And that's kind of not what you are all about.
No, I mean, you can't take it with you. And a lot of the research shows that people will pass on more wealth at their death than what they had the day they retired. And so our goal is to illustrate for people, here's how much you could comfortably spend without running the risk of running out. And so if leaving the most to your heirs is your number one goal, well, great. You know, that's a different way of looking at things. But if maximizing, you know, your own lifestyle and perhaps being able to gift and doing some things for family or charity while you're here to see the fruits of what you're contributing to, if you can do that without running the risk of running out, then we like to help people see how that is possible.
Well, thank you for all the stuff we've talked about. We could talk, I know, on and on and on.
Yes.
With both of our quick starts. And honestly, I'd love to talk to you about the financial stuff because it's fascinating to me, but we won't keep going. Maybe that'll be another podcast another time. But thank you so much for being here. And thanks to all of you guys for listening. And we will be back soon with our next Powered by Instinct podcast. Thanks.
Thank you, David. Bye-bye.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Powered by Instinct. This show is brought to you by Colby Corp, a company that helps leaders and organizations thrive using the only instinctive strengths assessment on the market. If you enjoyed this episode, then follow Powered by Instinct wherever you get your favorite podcasts, or join us online at colby.com/podcast for all the latest episodes.